Okay, my name is Angela Rosenberg, and I am the president and co-founder of Anjari Foundation, a nonprofit here in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Survive game. Learn how entrepreneurs started, sustain, and succeed.
Hey, it's Kellen, and today we are on the boat of Anjari Foundation with the president and the captain of the boat. And this is a beautiful boat. I will try to take some B-roll and show you guys some of the things, but people can actually live on this boat. So we don't want to get all in their business. But Captain Angela is going to give us the game. And I say Captain Angela Rosenberg, Mountain of Roses. For those of you who want to Google her last name, you can check that out. Or I think Red Mountain or Red Hill, depending if it's in German or if it's in, you know, Sweden. I don't want to offend anyone. But Captain, thank you for having us.
Thanks for coming aboard.
Well, tell us, this is all beautiful. This looks good. I want to go out like right now. And you say you go out for, you know, weeks, and they can even go out months at a time. How did we get here? Because this wasn't all just dropped onto you, you know, coming out of all the different education schools and degrees that you got. How did we get here?
Well, it was a labor of love. It was something that started as a dream. Kind of an idea with my sister, me, and my parents. And as I sort of went through my career, originally as a marine scientist and in managing science labs, and then also my passion for being on boats and for yachts and traveling the seas, I brought all that together and formed Anjari Foundation.
Okay. Now, from school, and tell the people so they don't think I'm just, how many degrees you went to school, and then you went again and then again and again. From going to school, like, how many years did it take? What were the steps that you had to have, you know, your own ship in this beautiful, I mean, if you guys could see the background all the way, this is beautiful.
So I was gaining experience and degrees sort of simultaneously. So when I graduated high school, I really liked science, and I was thinking pre-med. And so I was looking at biology degrees and different schools that were strong in pre-med, and I always had been on the water with my family. I loved snorkeling from when I was 2 years old with my parents. We would travel a lot on boats, and so that was something that was always close and dear to my heart. And when I was applying for schools, my cousin was at University of Miami's law school, and he said to me, you know, they have a great marine biology program. Have you ever thought about that as a career? And actually, I hadn't. You know, nowadays, I think people talk a lot more about marine biology as a career. But back then, I'm older than I look. You know, it was 2002. And I'm thinking, what? I can do that for a job? Like, study marine biology? So I decided, like, change course, forget pre-med. I'm going marine biology. And so I did an undergrad degree at University of Miami for marine biology. And I love the science. I love the research aspects of it. And so I decided to continue on to grad school.
Awesome. Now, when you talk about, you are older than you look, because I think you and I are around the same age. I think I'm a little older, but I was thinking of references, and I was like, if I mention silver spoons, will she even know what I'm talking about? Because sometimes, like, my kids are like, what did you say, Alf? Who is that? And then I have to show them. But, so with the education, would you say if somebody wants to be a marine biologist, you want to be a scientist in this field, that you need to go to school and that you need to do more than a bachelor's?
I would say generally yes. So I did a master's degree. You don't have to go to college for marine biology. You can go for any biology, science, chemistry, physics, any science or mathematical technology. I even know people in engineering who then went on to grad school in a marine science field. So I think you can have, as long as you have a strong foundation in sort of the STEM realm of undergrad, then you're competitive for going in to do a master's or a PhD. And in my case, I did a master's, which was plenty for what I wanted to do and worked out really well. I also have friends who did PhDs and are running labs and faculty at universities. And I also have friends who graduated with a bachelor's degree and went on to work as techs in different companies.
Can you talk about, for that person listening, maybe they're in school right now and they're like, well, okay, I'll do the master's, but I really don't want to do any more research. I don't want to do the PhD. Will the PhD make any more money? Will the master's, from someone who's doing their bachelor's, make people more money? Because sometimes we get out of school and we learn, oh, there's no more money unless we go to do something totally different.
So for a PhD, I would say if you want to be in academia, working at a university, either as a lecturer or a research university where you are running your own lab and teaching students, you will make more money and you need a PhD. Certain government jobs, you get different level pay grades based on coming in with a PhD. And those are really the primary ones, because a lot of the other jobs out there, if you want to go work at oil companies, if you want to go work for environmental consulting firms, work under faculty, a master's degree is plenty, and sometimes even a bachelor's degree with the right experience is great.
How is that scholarship money for those of the listeners and followers who are Dave Ramsey fans like myself, and he tells people, yeah, got too much education, can they go debt-free? Is there enough scholarships out there if you're a good student?
So I was fortunate to actually go on a partial scholarship to University of Miami for academics, and there's definitely a lot of different scholarships out there for undergrad and financial aid. The best part about going to grad school is if you go to grad school for research, you're actually paid. You're given a stipend. So you don't have to pay for tuition. Your advisor is paying your tuition, and you're getting a small stipend. I'm not going to say it's anything fantastic, but it's enough to live off of. A lot of grad schools now even give you health insurance while you're a student. So it takes a little bit of that stress off of like wanting to continue in the research field, because even though you're not yet really working fully, you are getting something, you're not paying something.
And it's better than being at like McDonald's or somewhere, you know, getting burned up. You're in the field, you're getting experience, and it looks great on the resume. Now, if someone wants to get into this field and they want to do all the education, would you say, you know, because everything now online is, everyone's making millions of dollars. Everybody is six figures and 6 foot and every other six you can think of. Like, making a living at this and being able to afford some of the things we see in Florida, is that something, should you do it for the money? You know, is there enough money to say, I'm excited to do this for the money?
I would say that being a marine biologist has to be a passion, and it is not. No one goes into it to make the, you know, make millions of dollars. It's not impossible. I even have science friends who also are really good with science communications and are influencers to some level as they're doing their research. I have colleagues who've been on Shark Week and Shark Fest, National Geographic, you know, and they're getting either paid or they're getting supplies and other stipends for that sort of work. But marine biology is just not a career that you go into to be wealthy.
Okay. But, you know, with the influencer, and please believe you guys, before I get off this boat, I'm going to talk to her about, you know, what type of character we can create, because this is, like, this is set up for reality TV as we see it. You know, we see the Iceman fishing and, you know, all that. So, don't do it for the money. What made you fall in love with it, where you're like, I'm able to discover things? Like, what's your forte of what you're looking for when you go out?
I always had a thirst for knowledge. It's just, I don't know, innate personality trait of mine. And so I was always excited to learn new things. I was excited to see how things are connected. And with marine science in particular, it's super interdisciplinary. So you like physics, you like chemistry, you know something about biology, you know, obviously marine life, and you put that all together, and that's very exciting for me. And with Anjari Foundation, I am supporting all different kinds of research. So it's not just one thing that we're doing when we go out. Sometimes we're studying sargassum seaweed. Sometimes we're looking at coral reefs and coral bleaching. Sometimes we're taking samples of water across the Gulf Stream and looking at influences of runoff and other things along those lines. So there's so many different projects that we do on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis that it just keeps it interesting.
Okay, and there's, you know, we don't know all about what's underneath us, and so there's always something to discover. How do those ideas, like, are you the one who has to come up with the ideas and the problem and then say, let me get a team to find a solution, or do problems come to you and they say, we want you to, you know, look into this?
So when I was working strictly as a marine scientist, I was a little more on the design, experimental design side of things and solving those problems. Now I have other scientists coming to me and saying, we need to solve this problem. We want to use your boat and your resources to help us do that.
Okay, when they come, do they also come with the paycheck, or do you also then have to help with the fundraising of their that issue?
It varies. So most of our scientists do actually charter the vessel. The idea is that we charter at low cost, so we cover the cost of the vessel, so we can continue to supply this, you know, as a resource for scientists. Mm-hmm. And then when we take students out or other educational side of what we do, that a lot of times is covered by grants, donors, and other groups.
Okay, so much in that. Let's get into the personalities. You showed me, you know, everyone has different places, and you and Kevin have your own space and your own privacy. When you get this many adults, you're going out, and even you guys have kids. My gosh, I could only imagine the issues, and don't let a toilet have a malfunction, right? Like, how do you deal with the personalities when you're going out for the longer haul?
Well, it takes a special personality. For Kevin and I are great at getting along with everyone, and you kind of have to look at the positive and the rewarding parts of it. And when we're out on research expeditions, we're running things efficiently, and we're trying to help people conduct their science and their research, and divers in the water, divers out of the water, feeding them meals, you know, moving the boat, all these different components. And honestly, we work with really great scientists. It's not hard to hang around with them for weeks at a time, and yes, it's nice to at least have like your own room, mm-hmm. so you can escape. But no, they've been great. You know, when we take students out, they're only for a day, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's maybe all I could take. But there's something so rewarding about working with students who've never done this, you know, have never seen a shark before, have never been on a boat before, and you have these conversations with them, and it's just, you can see the wheels turning, and you can see the enthusiasm, and so it's exciting, and the pros definitely outweigh the cons.
In today's climate where everybody is right, like everybody, whatever you do, it's okay, it's right. Do you have to have folks, you know, sign a policy? This is what we don't do. There's no smoking cigars, or there's no this, you know, there's no drinking too much. We know you got to have your wine at the end of the night. Like, do you have to go through these etiquette classes before you go out?
There is a significant amount of paperwork that goes into every expedition, and expectations are laid out very clearly. Safety is obviously number one on any boat, and we believe that strongly. You know, you have to be safe. There's certain things you have to do, whether you're a minor and a student on board, or whether you're a scientist chartering the vessel. And if you aren't behaving appropriately, we will, you know, we'll reprimand you and eventually cancel the charter if that's what it comes down to. But fortunately, everyone's been really good, and you lay out the expectations, and everyone understands, and you know, things go off really well.
Okay. Now, you go talking about getting the donors and dealing with donors. Everybody is going after money. There's plenty of it because Congress and Senate, they can, you know, make it when they want. How has that been in getting the research done? Because at the end of the day, we need this research to kind of, you know, help with our technology and figure out what's happening. You know, are we polluting everything to a point where we have a ticker? Like, how is it going to convince donors who might not necessarily know what's going on? They have the money, but not the knowledge. How do you do that? The networking, tell people, because people just get frustrated and say, I have a big dream, but I don't know where the donors are or how to even talk to them.
Well, so one of the big things that was part of founding of Anjari Foundation was I was a marine scientist. I worked with a lot of other marine scientists before being in the nonprofit world. And I saw that scientists weren't great at talking to the public, weren't great at sharing their research beyond their specific field and the conferences, you know, for their colleagues, and didn't have a lot of opportunities to do so. So when we do research expeditions, we try to share as much as possible. Some information is certainly proprietary, and we can't share it immediately, but we try our best to get media around every research expedition, what is happening, why it's important, what we found, you know, follow up with people as well. And some topics are more exciting than others. You know, that always happens. Coral bleaching was a huge one because last year it was a super warm summer, and, you know, the Florida Keys, the Bahamas, tons of bleaching. So that was a very big topic. It was a lot easier to share with the donor who already kind of understood it versus some of the other topics that we study.
Okay. When you talk about the problems underneath the water, how bad are, you know, you guys are going out trying to do research and you have someone on a jet ski and boats that, you know, don't follow the rules, might not even went to the DMV to get a license. How bad are we underwater for what you see when you're around, you know, the big cities like this? Are we just polluting the hell out of the sea?
I will say it's really sad to go out and every day find trash in the ocean. And even trash that ends up on the street miles and miles and miles inland makes its way to the ocean. And it's, you know, we can't clean up. There's so much trash. We find a balloon floating. We pick up, you know, the balloons. We do what we can. But it is a little disheartening that you're always finding trash everywhere, inland and offshore. Boaters, some are great at it. I know a lot of boaters who use reusable water bottles, you know, who are very careful to make sure their trash is disposed of properly and doesn't end up in the ocean. And I also see, you know, the exact opposite. So I think if everyone could just do a little bit more and just be a little more careful about how they dispose of their trash and single-use plastics and things like that, it will make a really big difference.
Okay. Now, you're nice about it. We met at Leadership of Palm Beach County and the focus group, the most effective group ever is how I'm putting it. We had the angry scuba diver who I plan on having her on. Have you ever, you know, collaborated with her? Because she was passionate in telling everyone about the pollution. You know, I could see the collaboration. That might be the next show, you guys, for Angela's podcast and YouTube. Any collaboration there?
So we actually have. So Diane with Friends of Palm Beach, she is certainly passionate, and I love how passionate she is about it. She and her group are out on the beach, like, cleaning up almost every day of every week. So talk about making a difference and doing something huge, you know, and doing your part, for sure. She and Friends of Palm Beach and Andrea Foundation, we've collaborated on some of the cleanup projects, some plastic pollution awareness projects that we've done. We created like sculptures with plastic trash that are on display in different places. She's helped us out with some of our lagoon drifts. So we have a citizen science experiment where we deploy biodegradable carts in the water around Lake Worth Lagoon, and we look at where they go to look at pollution transport and what it would be if trash went in the water, where would it end up, and look at origins and sources of pollution. So she's been great, and I'm sure there'll be future collaborations as well. You should definitely do a podcast with her.
And I'm coming. I've already sent something. I'm just, you know, timing is everything, and everyone is you know, doing their thing. But I'm going to catch her. You put a word in for her. Talk about your community give back, because this whole thing is a community give back. And when we talk about cleaning the beach, cleaning the oceans, talk about what other programs or what you're doing and how, you know, youth who might be able to get credit for this from their high school or for their college, you know, admissions, or if they're in college just to do a good thing. What are you doing and how can the community like connect and be involved?
So one of the biggest things we do, especially in our education program, is a program called Coastal Ocean Explorers. And we have a Coastal Ocean Explorers Sharks program. So we feel really strongly, and personally from my own experience, hands-on experience is the way to go. That's what gets you excited about research. That's what gets you excited about the ocean. That's what introduces you to the ocean. And so we take students out from Palm Beach County and beyond throughout the year to work with scientists on board the research vessel, do shark tagging, do shark research, and learn about what it's like to be a marine scientist.
Wow, shark tagging, that sounds fun. That's like the ultimate fisherman's like thing. Like all the fishermen do. Fishermen sometimes, I want to be a part of it just so they can tag a fish and maybe take a picture. Like, do you have those enthusiasts who try to get on the boat just for that?
We definitely have other people ask as well, but currently it is strictly open to students.
Okay.
Teachers. So we work with the schools, we work with teachers, we work with other organization leaders, and we invite a group out for the day, and it's a whole, you know, there's a whole day itinerary that involves all the research components and learning what it's like to be a marine scientist, what it's like to be a shark scientist, the methods used, and, you know, and what a career like that might look like.
Okay, and is that that's an all-day thing? What time does it start? Like, in the day, when do you end?
People meet at the dock at 7:30 a.m. Mm-hmm. and it ends around 4. So it's a full day on the water, and I mean, you're a scientist.
Okay.
You're a scientist for the day.
You're a scientist.
All aspects, yeah.
And we talked off air on how some of that, how much it can cost and how it can be funding. It's not just for the private schools. You do it for everyone, but let them know, you know, the process and the price and how some of that kind of works out if you don't have, you know, a big piggy bank.
Right. So it is an expensive, research is expensive, boats are expensive, and it costs us $5,000 for an expedition. That includes the expedition and also a classroom visit where we talk to students in the classroom about what the research is going to look like in a little bit more detail, and then you come out on the boat and actually do that research. And that is, and that's something that we feel very strongly that's a unique experience that should be open to everyone. So while some schools do pay $5,000 and they get an expedition, there's a lot of schools that also apply that either have partial funding or no funding, and we get grant funding, sponsorships, and donors to help support that so we can take everyone out.
Now, that's awesome. Now, when the funding, you know, comes, does it, hey, I come to the dock and I have to give you the $5,000 now? How does that, you know, that process work just for that person who's thinking about it, but they needed it laid out, and I do not want them emailing me, or you say, well, how do you do, I got half of the money. Like, how soon in advance do they need to have the money?
So there is an application on our website, andjari.org, and if you're a teacher or a group leader, you go in there, you fill out the application. Part of the application is what funding do you have available, if any, and then we contact you from that. So we are matching what we have available at the time with your schedule. We have to put together the schedule once we agree on a date, and then we move forward and say, okay, you have to pay. It is in advance, because a lot of groups do fundraise for it, or where, you know, we have a grant, and it's this grant has to be used by such and such a date. So we make all those arrangements ahead of time. Then there's, you know, the paperwork side of it, and then classroom visit, and come out and do the expedition with us.
And up to how many kids?
So generally it's 14 students on board and 3 chaperones.
Okay, that is awesome. I am sending Talented Teen Club. You have first come to mind. I'm thinking Ms. Sean Ho King. This would be great for the ladies and some of the gentlemen that come. But yeah, she's been around like 18 years in Palm Beach County, and this would be just awesome. Now, we're talking about funding. We talked off camera even about a little about funding. You don't get in this to be rich. This is not your house per se yet. For the person who says, you know, I need to be rich. I have to be rich. I mean, I'm on these boats. I'm taking people out. I'm doing research that can save lives. What are some ways outside of TV that scientists get rich?
Well, like I said, no one really goes into science to get rich. Mm-hmm. But there is some really interesting research out there that if you discover the right things, or if you link up with the right people or the right companies even, you know, you get patents and you make big discoveries that can be life-changing, and that's one way that you can definitely make a lot of money. You know, I know marine scientists who are looking at specific marine animals, studying neurological disorders, Alzheimer's disease, you know, a lot of different things that if they were to make significant steps forward in those diseases, I'm sure that would result in, you know, significant funding.
Okay, because it's coming to the point, like, you know, there's a new remedy for everything, and nothing is new under this great sun, but people are finding, like, hey, get seaweed gel, and if you eat this, this will help that. And you as a scientist, do you kind of cringe and say, I get this and pick this up all the time, I don't know if that's helped my skin glow or my cancer stop, right?
Like, right.
People have all these remedies that I don't know how you find out, you know, the seaweed. But
I mean, I guess you try it and, you know, you line up with the right cosmetic agency or, you know, or whatever company you're working with, environmental consulting, you know, a lot of people do that. That's can be pretty lucrative as well. And yeah, it's trial and error. I mean, it's science.
Do you find seaweed to be a heal-all or some type of sea gel that, you know, people are eating some jelly, and I ate it, and I said, I'll eat the whole can of this. Like, I'm a sweet tooth. So
I'm gonna have to try that. What was this? You're gonna have to give me some samples.
Okay,
to try.
I'll show you. One was on Shark Tank. The guy is actually here in Palm Beach County. He was a Haitian guy. He showed how he lost like 100 pounds. I've met him at an event, but I had it, and I'm like, I have no discipline. I will eat this whole jar, this whole $30 plus jar, because yeah. But you don't find seaweed to be a cure all. Do you see it curing anything or any healthy benefits?
It very well might have healthy benefits. I personally have not used it for healthy benefits.
Because if you would think you're here, you're seeing it, and if it was that great, you'd be collecting it, saying, "Oh, I'm."
Maybe
gonna...
I should be. So I have to look into this.
How far and impactful is what happens in the Bahamas, what happens in Cuba impacts us, or vice versa? Because I've seen, like in Sierra Leone, I'm also a new citizen of Sierra Leone, and I see on Banana Island the trash from Freetown float onto the beach of Banana Island, and you're like, that's far. Like, they're throwing trash over there and it goes here, but Banana Island has no cars on it. It's so beautiful, and it's just a lovely thing. So, like, what we're doing here, how far does it impact? Does it impact the Bahamas? Does it go that far out? Does it go to, you know, give us the game on that.
If your water is a great connector, and every coastline is connected some way, whether it's very, very far connected, or, you know, something like the Bahamas or Haiti or Cuba that's much, much closer to Florida. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact that we get trash from Haiti on our beaches here. Mm. There's major currents that flow throughout the entire ocean. One of the major currents we have comes from the Gulf of Mexico. It comes between Florida and Cuba. It comes up through between the Bahamas and Florida, and that's going to carry a ton of trash and a ton of garbage, disease. Even if you have an algal bloom, it can move the algal bloom around. You know, a lot of times we get big blooms over in the Gulf of Mexico, and they start making their way around to the Keys and stuff. So it's definitely all connected. I mean, just think about when you have people from Haiti or Cuba getting on a raft, you know, and they land here because of the currents. Mm-hmm. So if they can do it, so can all the trash, and so can everything else that's going in the water.
Okay, so it shows how we're all connected, and we all need to, like, make sure you're good, because if you're not good in this neighborhood, the trash is going to come over here, and we even see it here on the mainland, you know, between neighborhoods. And, like, I want you guys to be good and have enough, because if not, it's going to impact and reflect over here. From the Gulf of Mexico, how far do you guys go out? Do you guys go, like, through the Gulf, and do you go down to Central and South America?
Not that far. So we are regionally based. So West Palm Beach is our headquarters, mm-hmm. and our home port, but we do work in the Bahamas. We do work in the Keys. We go over to St. Petersburg and Tampa area. We'll go out into the Gulf of Mexico, into Florida Bay and south of the Everglades there, on the inside of the Florida Keys. So we do a lot of work regionally and travel. I think we're quickly approaching 18,000 miles on this boat in the last 7 years. So we're making our way around.
Okay. This is for my conspiracy theorist. Okay. To get from here to, you know, South Florida to Mexico, how many days does that take?
To Mexico. So, we would run pretty, like, long days. Mm-hmm. So we're not the fastest boat out there, but we could make it to probably like the Yucatan of Mexico, like the closest part of Mexico, mm-hmm. in 4 days.
4 days. Okay. That's what some of the conspiracy theorists say. They don't have a speedboat, but just thinking about that. Now, you have your boat, you have your foundation, you're doing great things. What else can you do besides write a book, besides do a podcast? Like, what do you see in the next 5 to 10 years?
Wow, that's a heavy question. I want to grow the foundation. Mm-hmm. We're small. We have 5 full-time people. So doubling or tripling that would be amazing and extend our reach for sure. Maybe one day we'll have a little bit larger of a boat where we can take even more scientists and even more students out at a time. That would also be fantastic. Being a, you know, the president of the foundation, you always have this time when your business is growing and you're trying to take a step back from the day-to-day stuff and get handing that off so that you can be bigger on the strategy side and bigger on getting donors and sponsors and the fundraising side of a nonprofit. So that's certainly a goal of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd also really like to help pass along my knowledge in the marine industry as well. So we're very focused on marine science and education in that side, but being a captain, how you get into yachting, and how you, this is, South Florida is huge in yachting.
Mm-hmm.
It is yachting capital of the world, and there's so many opportunities for people coming right out of high school to get involved in the marine industry, whether it's in, you know, electrician, plumbing, whatever, or being a captain or working on a boat. So there's a lot there that I'd love to be able to share with people and help get them involved.
Is it a field where there's enough jobs? So if we have, you know, whatever, 10,000 people graduating and saying, are there enough jobs for there to be a future? Because some folks, we know, they'll get the degree, but then they'll say, oh, I actually want to be, you know, Dancing on the Stars or something like that. Like, I tell people, do not do leisure studies. Do not do political science. I did political science. I did mass comm. Don't do that. You can learn all of that on your own. Do something that you cannot learn on your own and get tested and certified for. Like, where is the future bright for, you know, marine biology?
I think the future is bright because there's a lot more opportunity than there used to be as far as different fields of study and different knowledge and a lot more nonprofits out there for people to work for. But it's also super competitive. You know, if there's only so many people and so much money who can study sharks,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so you kind of have to pick and choose how you really want to be a marine biologist and be open to different ideas, different opportunities. And maybe, you know, maybe you do started wanting to study sharks and now you're open to looking at coral reefs or teaching marine science or doing science communications or working for a nonprofit. So there's a lot of different skill. You get a lot of different skill sets that can reach a broad industry, but you have to be open to them.
Okay. How do you find, you know, your, not your, keeping your passion for it, because who knows, you might discover something that saves all of us, but how do you, you know, just kind of find your peace and when trying to find the monies and more monies and saying, hey, if I had more money, if I had more donors, if they were just coming to me in droves, we could have, you know, 3 ships, 4 ships. Like, how do you just kind of get settled? Many entrepreneurs, business people get frustrated because they said, if I just had the bag, everything would be solved. If Bill Gates would just answer my email and give me what I need, Bezos. And so how do you find your peace in all of that?
Well, there's no question that Bill Gates, Bezos, if you're listening, please, by all means, call me up. But, you know, that certainly would make life easier because money does, you know, speak volumes and allow you to do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta love what you're doing. And you gotta have these goals that aren't always, there's the lofty goals for sure, but some of them are your annual goals or even your monthly goals, and you have to celebrate those too. And mm-hmm. you have to get excited about really what you're doing day in and day out. And yeah, there's some tedious days for sure, but there's also some really exciting days and some really rewarding days.
Do you ever get pissed off? You're there, you're looking for something that can be very, I mean, it's always very serious, but then you see, like, you know, some $40 million yacht pass through and you just see, you know, spring breakers on it, or maybe they're on a $2 million yacht, right? Still a yacht. And you're like, if we had that money, do you know what we could do in impacting the community?
I wouldn't say I get pissed off. As a matter of fact, a lot of times I'm like, why wasn't I invited?
Okay.
But I do think that people don't realize that, like, if you gave $100 and you gave $100 and you gave $100 and you gave $100, and the next thing you know, like, that's life-changing to an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people get really hung up on, well, I'm not going to give them $10,000, you know, or I can't afford to give them $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that's totally fair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would not expect that from everyone, or, you know, and me myself probably wouldn't do that either. But smaller amounts actually make a difference. And same with, you know, social media is such a big thing now. Just sharing people, like, organizations that you believe in and that you're passionate about, sharing their posts, telling other people about it, it actually makes a huge difference.
Okay. No, that's awesome. Now, is there a ton of grant money that, you know, that the real people are getting, not just the biggest organizations out there, then it trickles down, but is the government, state and federal, is there a good amount of money at least for the research? And, you know, I don't want to make it too political, because it's like, who's better, Democrats or Republicans? They all party at the same time on our dime. But, you know, is there, you know, some money's coming through to help you?
So a lot of the government, federal and state, that they do offer a significant amount of funding, but it is usually based on their values at the time, mm-hmm. you know, environmental values, and that changes annually with their budget and everything they pass. So for smaller organizations like us, a lot of that is really more boots on the ground organizations and foundations, individual donors, local grant makers, those who support their community, or, you know, even within Florida, we get a lot of our funding more locally.
Okay. Are you open for public speaking? Do you do that? Have you hit the circuit yet where you're a paid public speaker?
Not for pay. Not for pay. Maybe that's like my own, you know, nonprofit mission inside me. But I love sharing my knowledge. I love talking to other people and answering questions. And I know when I was a Marine Science student, I would have loved to know a lot of what I know now. Mm-hmm. So I definitely want to pass it on. Haven't done paid speaking yet, though.
Okay, so we're gonna talk off air about that. But for anybody looking for paid things, first you start at Toastmasters, then you go to the NSA, and that's where your Tony Robbins and your Les Browns learn to make, you know, all that money. Let the people know where they can find you. Any last words? Because I do want to save you something for your own podcast, your own YouTube, when you, you know, air it.
Well, so you can contact me on Anjari.org. We have a contact form there, or you're welcome to directly email me, Angela@Anjari.org, Angari.org. The advice that I give people the most, honestly, is take every opportunity you're given, because you never know what's going to turn out from it.
That is awesome, and that is true. And if you guys follow that through life, you will not be disappointed. Thank you for following through the end. Make sure, of course, that you like. Make sure you subscribe. But most importantly, make sure you share this game with somebody. It will change their life. You guys, be blessed. Okay.
All right, so this is the pilot house. So where we drive from, all of our navigation equipment, depth of water, we have radar, autopilot, everything you could need for any of those long trips.
Awesome, awesome.
And then walking this way, past our galley, our kitchen, and we have we're just cleaning. We have our lab here. So this, when we got the boat, it was actually a private yacht, and we converted it. So we put in all these countertops, and this is where everyone sets up experiments, computers, whatever we need to do for our research expeditions.
Awesome, awesome. And can we go downstairs?
Of course. Which
oh.
All right, here.
Yeah, there's so many rooms,
yeah,
you know, so many rooms. Yeah.
All right, I'll show you the guest room. So yeah. If you're a scientist who comes on board, watch your step. You get to stay in one of our three guest rooms.
And there's how many bathrooms on this?
So we got four bathrooms.
Two
up here for guests, and then we got one by the galley, and then one back with the crew. And I'll also show you up here, since I'm here before. So this is the flybridge, and this is where everyone kind of hangs out. Again, we can drive from up here and have really great visibility. Mm-hmm. We carry a big boat back there when we travel sometimes. So,
now is that just in case we...
For near shore work, near shore. Like sometimes we need to go to shore, go through mangroves or something.
Hello everyone. Come along with London and Sydney as they show you around the vibrant country of Cameroon. We explore the heart of Africa through the eyes of London and Sydney, two explorers who journey across the great city of Yaoundé, exploring its rich culture, vibrant market squares, cultural heritage, and wildlife. With giggles and excitement, London and Sydney Explore Cameroon takes you on a fun-filled adventure, providing insight into the country's culture and traditions through the pages of this book. It's packed with exciting stories and super cool facts about Cameroon that will make you go, wow. Get your copy now, available on Amazon and in libraries near you. There's only one easy way to experience the exploration of Cameroon, and it's through London and Sydney. Don't wait, get yours.
Are you tired of the rat race in America? Are you ready to visit the motherland to relax and rejuvenate? Are you ready to explore all that Africa has to offer? Then check out the brand new Diversify Game Academy course, Prepare for My First Trip to Africa. Are you worried about being able to afford the trip? We got you. We will show you how to travel either on a budget or as a baller. Learn how to stress the value of the USD. Did you know that 100 United States dollars is worth over 1,000 South African rand or 10,000 Kenyan shillings? Or 54,250 West African CFA? Are you worried about taking your kids? Get the game from Kellen Cash, a bona fide world traveler, having traveled to almost 20 countries, several of those in Africa. Get the game on taking your kids on their first trips. Learn how to find the best tickets, get the visas, and plan your own adventures in Africa. Don't let Eddie Murphy have all the fun. Plan your own coming to Africa trip, starring you, produced by you, and featuring you. If you are ready for a life-changing experience, sign up for our course today, Diversified Game Academy. Get prepared and purchase at diversifiedgame.com.